This is JLPT Bootcamp, the ultimate guide to passing the JLPT in less time with less pain. This is the JLPT Bootcamp podcast with your host, Mac. This happens to be episode 118, Adventures in Translation. And this is a special how to study, how I'm studying podcast, talking about what I'm doing to try to pass the N1 level of the exam, and what's working, what's not working, and what could work for you. I do one of these once a month, and then I have another podcast about the culture, what it's like to live and work in Japan. But for this show, I want to talk about translation. And one of my original goals when I first decided to study a little harder and take my Japanese to the N1 level was to become a translator. And before, I had been living in Japan for about 5 years, and I'd gotten up to about an N4 level, maybe barely N3 level, because that's kind of what you need if you're living here and you're not working in a Japanese environment. Heck, even if you're working in a Japanese environment, you probably you might not even need over an N4. You need a lot of vocabulary and a lot of comprehension, but N4 might take you a pretty long way, especially if it's not in an office, like if you're working at a restaurant or a hotel or something. That's all you need. And if you're traveling, that's all you need. About 3 years ago, about the time that I started this blog, I made up the mind that I wanted to change jobs. I wanted to maybe become a translator. I wasn't quite sure about what translation entails. And also I was going to get married, so I needed to be head of the household. I need to be able to settle things on my own, you know, call the utility company, call and arrange things as head of the household instead of relying on my wife to do absolutely everything. So decided to take my Japanese to the next level, try to study for N1, and one of those goals was to do translation. And because translation, from the outside at least, seems fun, more fun than teaching, because it's more like a puzzle that you have to put together. And there's a feeling of there's projects that you work on and you complete, and there's more of a feeling of completion. Whereas when you're teaching English, sometimes it just seems like you're teaching and you're teaching and you're teaching. Of course, people graduate, they move up, but there isn't a real feeling of completion per se. And so I think even translation also too for Japanese is completely different than a lot of other languages, because there's things that are just expressed completely differently in Japanese than they are in English. There's some things that aren't even expressed usually in English. They're left out in translations. And so it's really an interesting field for me, at least. So over the last couple of months, I've been doing translations here and there for a few people, just kind of friends of friends, and nothing really serious. I'm just trying to get my feet wet and see what it's like. And it has given me a lot of good exposure to different kinds of writing, even bad Japanese writing, like spelling mistakes and things that I've had to correct, which is interesting because, you know, you're normally used to reading textbooks. You're usually used to reading, you know, for the test, it's all been proofread. It's perfect Japanese. And so, but the real world, of course, is not like that. There's some spelling mistakes here and there. There's kind of some phrasing mistakes. There's things that are just left out. But overall, I've really been liking it. And I hope it stays that way. But to be honest, I'm still not entirely sure if I want to be a translator. It's a little bit of a lonely job. It also involves a lot of computer work, which I like computers, but I also like seeing the sky and talking to real human beings and whatnot. So, but so far, so good with it. But I would be interested to hear from the JLPT Bootcamp community, though. I'm sure there are more than a few translators out there that are listening. How is it? How is day-to-day translation? Do you like the day-to-day work? Is it? I've heard some kind of stories that it's pretty good, but then occasionally you have to pull an all-nighter. You don't sleep, and jobs can be very infrequent, come and go. Sometimes you'll be really, really busy, and then other days you'll have absolutely nothing at all. But anyway, in either case, doing some translation here and there, I believe can really help with your comprehension, because you have to look at it in a different way. You have to look at the text in a different way. And also, if you're doing translation for a paycheck, you have a picky client there to criticize your interpretations of the writing and tell you that you're not quite comprehending this just right. Yeah, you messed up this part, or this isn't exactly what I wanted to say. They kind of critique what you're translating, which is also very good because you can kind of refine your understanding and get better and clearer comprehension. Also, I like to, this time right after a test, I like to go back to reading for fun. Nothing that's going to tax my brain, that's going to really push a lot of vocabulary into my head. Just something that's enjoyable. And it, you know, trying to avoid philosophy or just trying to go towards a story of some kind that I want to know the ending to. And I believe this helps because, for one thing, no matter what level of the test you're taking, reading speed is constantly an issue, constantly something that hangs people up. And even for the N1 level, which gives you almost 2 hours to answer all the questions for vocabulary, grammar, and the reading sections, it seems like that's a really long time to just answer. I think there's about 65 questions or so. I could be completely off, actually. But it's not that much. It's one whole answer sheet that you are filling in 2 hours. But it can still be very difficult to just finish the test on time. And anything you can do to save some time here and there can be a huge help. So just being more comfortable with words that you even know already, you're not learning any new words, but just being comfortable with kind of speed reading those words can really help boost your speed with a test. And also, I would say one of my biggest enemies for the test is focus. And being used to reading can be a big help in this regard for all parts of the test as well. Even the grammar sections can be a little tricky for you to stay focused in. For the N1 level, there are a few grammar questions that have two or three sentences that you have to look at. So being able to get through those grammar questions that are a little bit bigger at a good pace can really help you score well and finish the test on time. And also, starting at about the N3 level, you can't rely so heavily on the lists anymore. There's plenty of lists out there. I, for one, have an N4 and N5 list at Memrise and on AnkiWeb that are fairly accurate. A lot of people have told me that they're fairly accurate. But past N5, N4, you should be using native materials on a regular basis, because you'll probably pick up a lot of good words that will show up on the test, actually. And a good strategy that has always worked for me is drill words so that they're in your head, so you kind of have this portable dictionary with you, but do some reading to truly understand how those words are used. studying the language and passing the test doesn't involve doing, you know, SRS, doing Anki, doing Memorize for 2 hours a day, every day, and that's it for your language study. It really has to be a lot of cross-training of reading, listening, speaking, of course, and writing. Doing all those things just kind of interlocked with each other can really help push you and get you past the test. And recently, for me, what I'm reading, I recently watched the J-drama Kazuku Gemu, which is it's a story about a at-home tutor that comes to help a boy go back to school after he had been bullied. It stars a actor from Arashi, which is a big band here in Japan, one of the big J-pop bands. He's the main character. He's the at-home tutor. And, of course, it's not as simple as that. It's not, you know, there's twists and turns and secrets to it and a backstory that goes through the whole series. So, fairly interesting J-drama. I kind of like it because has a lot of common language in it, things that you would use on a daily basis, as opposed to maybe like a crime drama or something that would have language that is interesting to read and to try to figure out the meaning of, but you wouldn't use it every day. And luckily, the ebook version of the book that goes along with the J-drama is only 340 yen, so I thought I would give it a try. I've never tried a Japanese ebook before. Looking forward to it because usually, you know, with a paper book, you can make notes and look up words and kind of get a closer look on it, look at it. So it's a little bit easier to read, I want to say. So just looking into using an ebook, does that work? Can I still take notes and still get through it as fast as I would a paper book? So trying that out this month. I'll let you know how it works out next month. And the last thing I want to report is that I've started studying kanji in a slightly different way. Last month I whipped up an N3 course that practices kanji. Like this, it's kind of sorted out. Instead of just studying the kanji one by one, I grouped all the words for a particular kanji together. So words that use the onyomi and the kunyomi together as a pack, kind of, so you practice the pronunciations of the kanji as actual vocabulary instead of just abstract sounds. To me, that locks in the kanji a little bit more easily. And I've also turned around and packaged, grouped those kanji together in other groups. So, for example, like talking about school or talking about art or describing things or daily life. There's different groups for the different kanji. And I've been trying it out over the last month, and honestly, I really like it. The best part of it is that it pairs a lot of similar-looking kanji compounds together that are easy to confuse, like, for example, jotai and jokyo. They both of those words kind of mean situation or state of affairs. There's obviously some nuances there that I'm not going to go into, but they have a very similar meaning and sometimes can be used in somewhat similar situations. So practicing the two words together can be difficult, of course, and a little confusing, but I think it makes those nuances very clear because you're aware of those nuances. So it's been very helpful for me studying with that deck. And I've already started work on stage two. Stage one is published on memorize.com. You can check it out there. And I hope to get stage two out pretty soon. But definitely let me know what you think about the course. Is it good practice? You can leave me a comment on this post or over at memrise.com for the course. But I'd love to hear your feedback. Do you find it as helpful if you are studying for the N3 test as I've been finding it over the last month or so? Anyway, I'll leave you with that. But I would like to know, how was your month? Are you getting ready for the big December test this year if you didn't take the July test? Are you taking it easy this summer, this possibly hot summer if you're in Japan? Let me know in the comments for this particular blog post. This is podcast episode 118. You can come visit the website at jlptbootcamp.com and leave me a comment for this post. Or if you can travel by the website, jlptbootcamp.com, and click on the Contact Me button and send me a message about anything, any questions you might have. Or if you prefer old-fashioned email and you don't want to cruise over to the website, you can email me. That's Mac, M-A-C, at jlptbootcamp.com. I'd love to hear from you any of those three ways. And until next week, have a great week studying. To claim your free 21-page ebook on the 5 biggest mistakes people make on the JLPT, as well as more tips and tricks to help you pass the Japanese language proficiency test, come visit me at jlptbootcamp.com.